time now to welcome our in-studio special guest. And it is a great pleasure to have once again live in the studio, Andrew Nicol. How are you, Andrew?
Very good, thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Of course, the CEO of the Australian Trainers Association. Or also welcoming Kira Fitzgerald, who is the Participant Wellbeing Manager at Racing Victoria. How are you, Kira?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for making the time to come in. And another Kira, Kira Onley, who is the Participant Protection Manager at Racing Victoria. How are you, Kira?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Kira 1, Kira 2. We'll try and make sure we don't get confused here today. Ladies, before we get stuck into the theme of this next hour, which is all about participant health and welfare, just a quick overview of actually what you do and what your, I suppose, remit is at Racing Victoria and how you help the industry participants. Kira Fitzgerald, I'll start with you.
Yes, okay. So participant wellbeing, it's obviously a bit of a broad banner. My background, I'm a psychologist by profession, so that's how I came into the role. The role oversees the health and wellbeing of the participant population, trainers, stable hands and jockeys, even though they have a sort of large team themselves looking after their wellbeing. It includes working with individuals, so often get referrals from people like Andrew here, stewards, other trainers will call, participants, you know, stable hands will call about people they're concerned about, and my role is then to try link those people in with ongoing support, get them the help in whatever area it might be. So that's kind of the direct contact I have with participants. And then within the organisation, it's been part of broader discussions and trying to push for initiatives to help the broader participant population overall.
And we'll delve more deeply into that in a moment. Kira, Onley, we're going to have to say, Kira, from the Participant Protection Management area, which it sounds like it's a mouthful of a title. What does it actually mean?
Yes, it's a new role. It's been developed recently. It's based on some models from other sporting organisations like AFL, British Horse Racing, Tennis Australia, where my role is, I suppose it's a bit of a crossover with Kira One's role, but my role is particularly focusing on inappropriate behaviour and conduct within the industry and addressing those issues. So even though I sit separately from Kira One, we do refer each other to participants, and as the role evolves, I'm finding that there's a lot of work that we can be doing, but it's going well so far. Mm. So
how new is this role?
It's I started April last year. The policy, the participant protection policy, came in June. We're in the phase of now getting out there and getting the message out there that people are welcome to speak to me directly, to speak up about things that are happening in the stables or, you know, in the industry. So that's what I'm encouraging. So the policy works hand in hand with the speak up policy. So that's what my role is, just to promote that and then to oversee any issues that come out of that are reported to me.
Is that what you found has probably been the most difficult part of it, getting people to actually speak up?
Because
not just in racing, but it does seem to be also very, very specific in racing that people turn a blind eye.
For sure. So that's, it's going to be a big part of my role. But, I'm hopeful that as word gets out and people get the confidence to speak up, that then we can start addressing some of the issues.
Andrew, we've spoken in the past about these types of issues on a more broad level. How important are the roles of both Kira's for this racing industry and the participants as a whole?
I think it's essential, Michael. I think, you know, we obviously, you know, ad nauseum at the moment, we hear about people talking about the industry, fatigue, anxiety. Many years ago, the Trainers Association were pushing for the racing industry per se to get on board with a lot of other sports who had recognised this issue before and had put some frameworks in place that helped the participant, pool. We are a little late to the party in the racing industry, which is not unusual for racing. But, you know, with Kira Olney's role, I mean, that's a front-end role. I mean, if we can remove some of the behaviours and anxieties and concerns, then we look after well-being. With Kira Fitzgerald, who was, you know, we're proud to say at the ATA, she was the very first appointment in that area in 2016. But that was designed to triage at the back end. So you've really got the yin and the yang there at the front end to remove behaviours that can address and assist participants to just work in the manner that they can. And then with Kira, with a number of her initiatives, whether they're in-house at Racing Victoria or whether they're you know, external resources, it's there to help triage. So, you know, we see it in so many other industries where it's so prevalent, whether it's racing, whether it's cricket, football. I mean, it's all over the pages at the moment with a Glenn Maxwell or a Nick Madison or a Dane Beams, etc. So it's so important that this industry is now starting to take this as a frontline service and a resource, and we're just so pleased that we've got the qualified people within Racing Victoria to assist.
Why do you think it hasn't been so maybe open or public in racing as it has in other sports, where, as you mentioned, in the world of AFL, it seems every month there's a player from a certain club that is taking time out for mental health reasons. Now, I'm sure, and Kira, you deal with this specifically, you would know, this would be just as prevalent in racing, yet we don't seem to hear of it publicly or people maybe trying to take time out. I had Ethan Brown in the studio here midway through last year, who spoke so openly and honestly about his burnout factor. He needed to take time away from the sport. Why is it we don't hear more of that? Is it because people don't want to make it publicly known, or is it the fact that people rely on continual work for their income?
I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think there are people out there that are definitely struggling. Just my experience, people I talk to and people I'm assisting through tough times. There's definitely people out there that are needing a time out, and they're probably more able to quietly take that without people noticing. Obviously, jockeys is probably a bit harder and trainers, but your participants, you know, they can step back a little bit. But the other side of the coin is that a lot of them just have to keep pushing through. They don't have the option to take that time if they do need it. So it's a matter of trying to get them to engage and help and support whilst pushing on.
Is there that support there from Racing Victoria or the industry? Because if a player in a football team needs to take time out, or a cricketer, they still get paid.
Mm.
But that's not the case if a trainer or a jockey takes time out.
No, that's a tough thing, isn't it? They run their own individual businesses. They're small businesses, or medium or large. Some of them are massive businesses. But they're individual business owners. And I guess that's a difficult thing for them. It's managing their business. And if they do need to take those steps to the side, how they manage that. And some have the capabilities in regards to staff around them and teams, and are big enough to probably be able to do things like that. Whereas others, it's probably not a financial option to be able to step back or step aside.
Is that something that the Trainers Association has looked at as well? We know the Jockeys Association, the National Jockeys Trust, can help jockeys who, you know, have issues and fall on hard times. From the Trainers Association, is there a similar setup? And the forgotten band, are the workers, the stable hands?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, Michael. I mean, we do certainly have an Australian Trainers Trust that was set up in 2016. It's got a little bit of a different bent. It's based on providing financial resource to trainers who suffer illness, injury, or in the unfortunate case of death. So when they do need pure financial resources in that regard. So it's not just there when they fall on financial hard times. If that was the case, then we probably wouldn't have any money in the trust after week one. So, I mean, there's a lot of other things that we obviously have to do in the industry to try and address the financial stress and pressure. And a lot of the issues that we see, you know, obviously we talk about the fatigue element, which has been very, as I said, it's been very public in recent times with Natalie Young coming on the radio, with Mike Maroney talking about issues like that, and jockeys and others, Matt Hyland, Dwayne Dunn. I mean, we see it all the time. But associated with that is the financial stresses, and that does bring on a lot of these issues, because it's a labour-intensive industry, but it's also a capital-intensive industry. And, you know, you invest in livestock, you invest in facilities, training facilities, you have properties and so on and so on. So the trust is there as one of the mechanisms that supports our trainers nationally. We've paid out over 25, or we've assisted over 25 trainers nationally, many of those in Victoria. Somewhere in the vicinity of several hundred thousand dollars has been paid out to support families, not just the trainers themselves, but family members, where perhaps a loved one has passed away or has been in a serious situation. So we use that where we can, and it's supported wonderfully well by PRAs, by a number of the race day clubs who are our race day partners, where we have race events, and also by a number of corporate sponsors You know, including Tabcorp, who are a wonderful partner in that particular trust.
I want to talk about some of the specifics that you mentioned, including the hours. And as you mentioned, it's been in the news cycle in the past 7 days especially. But before that, I want to have a chat to Melissa Sell, who is the wife of trainer Mick Sell, to get a first-hand experience about the tough times that they have been through, but also the assistance that they got from Kira Fitzgerald and also Racing Victoria to try and get themselves back. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation today and putting out publicly on the table what yourself and Mick have been through and how tough it's been for you. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's an important phone conversation to have with you because you're willing to put out publicly what you've been through and the support that you needed. Can you tell us what the situation was for yourself and Mick and how dire it got not so long ago?
Just over 2 years ago, we found ourselves sitting in a police interview room as key witnesses to a murder trial. My best friend had unfortunately lost her life to the hands of her partner, and I was talking to her on the phone at the time that she lost her life. Mm. And, from there, Mick and I found ourselves literally in interview rooms and police stations being interviewed as key witnesses. And my friend Alicia, she was a huge part of our family life and with us every single day here, including our children. And following that, obviously, that was incredibly traumatic experience, and we couldn't even get our heads around what was going on at the time, but still having to try and function for work. And a few days after we'd lost Alicia and Mick and I was still trying to manage our day-to-day business and three children in this incredibly awful situation, Mick actually drove his car straight through an intersection near home, 5 minutes from home, an intersection we drive every single day. Mm. But because of the incredible fatigue and the confusion, the situation that had evolved, he just didn't even realise the intersection was there. And he went straight through it, missed a cattle yard, a concrete cattle yard by no more than an arm's length, and completely rode off his car. I still, to this day, I really don't know how he walked away from the situation. I have no idea, and I'm so grateful that he did. At that time, all we did was we tried to continue to work through what was going on, and we kept pushing ourselves. And then it got to a day where, as everybody in racing knows, we lost the great Frank Conlon, a fantastic bloke, and one of our true friends. And on the day that we lost Frank, myself and Mick, we collected Frank's horse that he had racing that day, and we took it to Kyneton, and we raced his horse for him. We wouldn't have done anything any differently. Mm. But at that time, we didn't realise how much we were struggling ourselves and how much our family was struggling. It was literally, Mick asked me to clean out his mailbox on his phone because he's completely phone literate. And the last message on that phone was a message from Kira. Kira Fitzgerald had rang and touched out and said, "You guys have been through way too much to deal with on your own, and we really want to assist you. Please get in touch with us." And I took that number out of Mick's phone and I went out into the garden and hid behind a tree, basically, like a little naughty child. And I rang Kira and I said, "I can't do this on my own anymore. I don't know how to support myself, let alone my husband and my three children. We're all struggling and I don't know how to do it on my own anymore." Mm.
And from that process, what occurred then with Kira?
Kira and I had a great chat. I think we were on the phone for over an hour, and she set up counselling services through Stableline. Within days, my whole family was set up in services that suited us. She had asked us. The Victims Assistance Program had let us down quite badly in regards to counselling services for my family, and Kira, she was asking the correct questions. What did we feel we needed? What did I need in that moment? What did I feel my children needed, my husband needed? And she was able to place us with individual counselling services to suit ourselves. And, you know, from that point, I still see Alice every now and again, who she placed me with, and my daughter, my youngest daughter, who's really, really struggled. I mean, how do you tell a six-year-old at the time, how do you explain the things that had happened in her world? There's just no way of getting your head around that. And in the meantime, we're trying to function in our day-to-day life and our business and having to, you know, still give our clients the attention they deserved and the time they deserved and our horses. But we weren't mentally capable of giving everybody every ounce of ourselves when there wasn't any strength left in us to do so. So Kira literally set us all up with individual services that suited us, and I was given the strength and the tools and the aids to build ourselves back up again, and to know that what we were going through was completely a normal reaction to the situations. That's an incredible thing, to have someone sit there and tell you, you're okay. Everything you're feeling is completely normal. You're allowed to feel. You're allowed to think, and you're allowed to emote. Mm. And that's an incredible thing to be told by somebody.
And how is Mick and the kids now? How are they coping?
Yeah, look, we're all, thankfully, we're on a good road. It's been a long process, but we're on a really good road at the moment. We, through the services that, you know, that we were provided with Stable Line, we were taught some tools of how to self-regulate, set some limits for ourselves, and say, you know what, that today is not the most important thing in the world. That can wait. And we've really set some hard limits on ourselves on how to regulate our own life and get a really nice work-life-family balance. And we're on a great track.
You mentioned the work-life balance, and that's a huge battle for anyone that's in the industry. And what yourself and Mick and your family's been through is more than what anyone should have to deal with, regardless of the work hours that you do in racing. But in regards to those hours, do you think there needs to be a recalibration about the 24/7 grind, the early mornings, the late nights in racing?
Incredibly so. I mean, you won't find a bigger supporter of that. I've been very loud and proud of it on social media. I'm not afraid to say that I think that there needs to be a bigger focus on balance. Night racing and twilight and all that, it's obviously here to stay. Turnover is a large part of our industry. We can't deny that. Our sport needs turnover to create and develop. But there needs to be room to move. We have to put in some balances. I know myself, my husband, Nick, is an incredibly hands-on dad, and nothing hurts him more than not being able to spend time with his children and see them at their sports and things like that. There has to be some room to move. We have to be flexible on how to create a better balance. You can't start at 3 o'clock in the morning and finish at midnight every single day of the week without expecting something traumatic to end up happening to someone within our industry.
Mel, I really appreciate your openness and your honesty, and I'm sure there would have been people listening to that and it would have struck an accord, and maybe there'll be others that are keen to reach out for help with you being so open and honest today. And just as you leave us on a more bright note, you've got a nice runner at Benalla today. I Am the Fox. How's it going?
He's actually flying, to be honest. So he ran really positive last week. He just probably needed that hit out. So hopefully Jessie, who's been having a great run of late, so hopefully she can get him across the line and we can get him another winner for the team.
Well, we'll be cheering at home today. Good
no
luck,
worries.
Melissa.
Thank you very much.
Melissa Sell joining us there. Kira Fitzgerald, just listening to that. How does that make you feel about the impact that you've been able to have on Mel and her family?
Mel is just one of the most remarkable people out there. What her and her family have been through and what they're overcoming is I guess, an example to everyone of the strength and the resilience that exists in this industry and just in people in general. And yeah, it warms my heart hearing her speak like that and knowing how much Stableline and what it has to offer has helped her and her family through this.
Well, we know Stableline is huge, and I know Jason Petcher's got the behind the barriers as well for people. Yep. Just as an overall broad picture, how many trainers or participants would reach out?
It goes up and down, actually. Different quarters, we get different sort of results. I'm not sure what's driving that. Average, we're probably getting 14 individual users in a quarter, 14, 15, and they can use it for multiple sessions, obviously. Some people will only use it for one or two, and others will be engaged long-term in the service and continue to use it.
Andrew, just a quick one before we take a break. I'm going to have Giles Thompson in the studio next week. Yep. We're going to be talking about the working week and all of the issues that have been put on the table. But from the Trainers Association, it probably hit a peak last week with the jockeys saying that they've had enough the night racing. So Wayne Hawkes on after the last night saying that in particular the night meetings should finish at 9 o'clock. Is there a stance from the Trainers Association as to the working day and the night racing, the times and so forth like that?
Michael, I guess it's a work in progress. I mean, this is not new and we're acutely aware. I mean, we're at the coalface. We've been talking about this for years, haven't we, really? I mean, there's been some subtle changes that have been made over the journey. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that 40-minute gaps at race meetings in the country were reduced to 30-minute gaps. I mean, we had a time there for Pakenham. In the winter months, we reduced the finish time from 9:30 down to 9 o'clock. You know, the race, the double up Wednesday as opposed to the meeting on the Monday. I mean, it's still a work day. It's not a race day. So there are some subtle differences in the way the day unfolds. So we're acutely aware that this is an evolutionary thing. It must develop, and we must get better balance. We know that. In terms of where we're right at the moment, we are really happy with the conversations that we're having with Racing Victoria. The VJA, the ATA, we're right at the coalface with them at the moment, and we've put forward a number of issues to do with all the fundamentals that have been raised recently by Natalie Young, raised training hours. I mean, Dwayne Dunn raised finish times. I mean, all of those issues are on the table, and we are working towards a resolution on a number of those. As you would appreciate, and the last thing I'll say on that, It's the time for talk is probably over. We need action. It isn't a simple equation because we have race clubs, we have wagering partners, we have television partners, we have workers and employees and EBA arrangements, and we have the trainers themselves with their points of view, with some who say, I love getting up at 1 a.m. in the morning, and others saying, let's go there at 5 p.m. Let's increase the pool of people and the available pool of resources. So everyone's got a point of view. And at the right time, as an industry, we've got to select the right driver. And if the right driver is participant welfare, and that's why we're here today, to say that like equine welfare in recent times, the elevation of equine welfare to a paramount position has been just amazing. Participant welfare has to go the same way.
Do you think that because of what happened with the 7:30 report and the public outcry outside of the racing bubble, that participation welfare or participant welfare has been forgotten in the last 6 months, or it's been overshadowed?
I don't, to a degree, maybe, but I mean, we have been addressing some participant welfare matters, and as I just read some of those out, probably not enough. Again, it's been subtle, inch by inch change rather than monumental change. Whereas with equine welfare, that has taken front and centre stage. That has just been amazing what's happened in that space. So, you've probably got a valid point there. But as I said, 2020 has to be the year that we make meaningful change in that participant welfare area.
You're listening to a special forum on the participant health and wellbeing in the racing game here in Victoria. Andrew Nicol from the Trainers Association, Kira Onley, who is the Participant Protection Manager, and also Kira Fitzgerald, who is the Participant Wellbeing Manager, are my special guests in the studio. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, I'm going to ask Kira Onley about your role specifically and how you think it will change moving forward and how racing is placed in the current day in regards to bullying and also what racing can do as a whole to make sure that that is stamped out of the industry. That's more still to come.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Back to Racing Pulse. We've got Andrew Nicol, we've got Kira Fitzgerald, and also Kira Onley, who are in at the studio discussing participant welfare. And while we're in the break, Damien Oliver, champion jockey, has sent in a message saying it would be helpful if we alternated the Friday night meetings between Moonee Valley and Cranbourne, because essentially it could be a different pool of trainers, staff and jockeys who would be attending those meetings in the different regions. Andrew, is this something that has been raised before and could work?
Yeah, it's been discussed. I mean, the race program is something that's discussed with all the clubs, and they put in all their preferences. They certainly talk to the trainers and the jockeys associations, but Moonee Valley has a very successful summer racing period of 8 weeks plus. They take advantage of the weather. We see Cranbourne, who probably sit later in the year and have their Friday night meeting. So, you know, can we alternate that? Should we alternate that? I guess it's a better question directed towards the two clubs on why their preferences are, which I think as a layman you can probably understand why. But certainly if that would help ease pressure in terms of fatigue and travel for a lot of our participants, it's certainly something worth looking at.
Why would there be an issue of putting the last race on any night meeting at 9 o'clock or 9.30 instead of 10 o'clock?
Well, I guess probably symptomatic of racing, Michael, is that whenever you do something, you've got about six or eight stakeholders that you need to talk to. When you look at changing things, you've got race clubs that have a preference for their patrons and when they sell dining packages, for example. You've got the wagering providers where you get crossover with the different, you know, codes and the different races, and you've got to make sure that you've got the right, you know, position on the clock. You've got staff. I mean, if you start a race meeting earlier, are you going to get staff who are finishing work at 5 o'clock and you know, they've got to have setup time at a race club, so do they have to employ more people? There's a lot of people involved in this mix who have to a degree, be satisfied that they're not going to be impacted in their business and what they're trying to do. So, you know, you can make some subtle changes when you know, what we're looking at the moment is, as we've heard, people are talking about bringing the last meeting back, but what does that mean from a wagering perspective? We've got to look at all of those things.
A lot of people, a lot of shareholders, but you would agree, or I would say, that the most important people are those who are out there putting their lives on the line, which are the jockeys.
And I think that was really the point that I made earlier, that I think the rubber has hit the road now. We've got to get serious in 2020. Where does participant welfare sit as the key driver? We always have understood it's a driver. It sits beside a number of other drivers. So at what point in time are we going to make that the acute driver, and it will take precedent over the others? And I think that's part of the ongoing discussions right now. I think that's why we've had so many of our participants, our high level participants, Dwayne Dunn, Natalie Young, Mike Maroney, Wayne Hawks, they've all come out and spoke on this subject, but they're all reiterating the views of whether it's the smaller trainer, the medium sized trainer, the smaller jockey, the etc. They're mirroring a similar view that right now probably participant welfare has got to take the lead role, and some of these other drivers have got to sit in the background.
Kira Olney, your participant protection manager, as you said, it's a new role. And look, I know the stories that I've heard and have been made public, and they've even been going to court from back in the old days, some of the horrendous activities that occurred in stables regarding apprentices, regarding females. We've come a long time, hopefully, since those dark days. How do you see the racing environment for participants these days?
I think it's getting there. Obviously, there's some work to do, but it's similar to other industries and organisations, you know, bullying and harassment is there, but organisations are now starting to address it, and that's why Racing Victoria created my role, so that we can be proactive. I think a big piece of my role is to educate participants on what is appropriate, what isn't, and then take some action when it is inappropriate, and then obviously educate them on to how to deal with it if they do have an issue. Refer them on to the appropriate people, whether it be, it could be a work safe within their remit, or it could be within the racing rules, it could be a breach there. So we're on the right path. It's obviously an issue globally. So, I think we are on the right path by having that policy in place and encouraging participants to actually speak up about any behaviour.
And it happens in any job and any Absolutely. Industry. And one of the toughest things in those places is if someone does feel they are being bullied or treated unfairly, how do you make a complaint anonymously? Because you don't want them to put at jeopardy your job and your future.
Yeah, and that's obviously a massive thing. And that's why we've developed the Speak Up policy. It gives the participant protection so they can remain anonymous if they wish. The other thing is if they do wish to speak to me, it is in a confidential, it's certainly kept confidential, that they can report it anonymously. But we do encourage them to speak to me directly, and they can make a report either securely online through the website or directly by telephoning me. So part of my role is also to get out and get that message across that they have got a contact that they can contact in a secure environment.
You must be very busy because there's more than 800 trainers, 180 jockeys and 2,500 stable hands, and you look after all of them?
Yeah, but I think because it's a relatively new role, so I need to get word out there that they can speak to me. So that's why I'm starting to get out and about. So on next Tuesday morning, we've got a free coffee on RV at Cranbourne Trackwork in the morning, where Kira Fitzgerald's also going to be there promoting Stable Line. So we're just trying to get word out, and there is a confusion as to who people can go to. So that's the message we want to get out. So.
What's the response been since you've been in your job? Has there been a lot of people that have come to you and said that, look, I'm being bullied, I'm being unfairly treated?
I'm seeing that as, I suppose it's word of mouth. So as I'm dealing with participants, then they're speaking to others that they may have knowledge that they're experiencing something similar. So it's starting to ramp up a little bit. So, which is what we want. We want people to speak up. So I think that we're relying on other participants to, I suppose, say, hey, that's happened to me as well. I spoke to Kira at Racing Victoria and this is how it was dealt with.
And what occurs? If there is a case of bullying within a stable or other behaviour which is untoward, whether it's sexual harassment, or discrimination, what's the process?
There is a couple of ways it can be dealt with. So initially it'll be basically triaged by myself, and if it's deemed a breach of the rules of racing, then I'll investigate it and take it to it may end up as a steward's inquiry, or it could be mediated. There could be some mediation. There also is I've got a starting to create some good working relationships with stables, with their HR departments.
Do they exist? Do stables have HR departments?
Bigger ones do, yes. And that's a big piece of education as well, educating the stables. So I've now engaged with WorkSafe as well. So we're all working together, and also grateful for Andrew's help. He's been very proactive with the trainers. So I think with everyone on the same page that, yeah, we can start dealing with these issues. Doesn't necessarily have to go to a steward's inquiry. It might be something that can be dealt with internally or referred on. But yeah, there's a couple of different options that we're finding that are all working towards getting a good result.
Is this an area that you see being further expanded? Like I would imagine for Kira's point of view that looking after 3,000 people, you probably need a couple more Kira's working in this department. And from a trainer's point of view, is this an area that we need to put more focus on in stable bullying, harassment and so forth?
I think... Generally, Michael, I mean, we have had a view that you've got so many people in this industry, as you just pointed out, they're so disaggregated. They're across the state. How do you get 2, 3, 5, 6, 8 people doing this job? I mean, that's the difficulty of it. But
any different regions?
And with different points of view and different, some are reticent to make a call, some are stoic about it. We're looking after ourselves. It's always done internally. So, I mean, the key for us, as I said very early on in this discussion, was to get a framework in place. You know, racing late to the party, but nonetheless, here we are. So let's get it started. So it's been great that we've got Kira on board. It's been great that we've got Kira Olney on board now, the front end with that education piece and that support piece. It's been great that we've got Kira Fitzgerald back in 2016, which was more the triage at the back end, because the problem was already prevalent. you know, we support Kira from a trainers association. We're always talking, us three, about, you know, we've got an issue potentially here or an issue potentially there. But it's broader than that. I mean, Kira Fitzgerald hasn't spoken about her trainer champions program yet, which, you know, she should talk a little bit about.
Well, let's hear about it. What exactly does that entail?
Okay, Trainer Champions was rolled out back in 2016, so back at the start of my time in the role. Coming into the role and being faced with over 800 trainers scattered around the state, just as Andrew was speaking about, you've got such a broad range of people from different backgrounds and very hard to access and communicate with. The idea came about to bring in trainers from all different training centres and tracks so that we kind of had trainers dot pointed around the state that we could invest in. And so we did a mental health training day with them all. We had some 20 trainers attend a whole day course, and they learnt about all sorts of things to do with mental health, mental illness, who's affected, understanding it in the workplace, how to deal with it, conversations about suicide, how to refer on to help, how to have conversations. It was a really valuable day's training for these people. And from that point, I've got them as sort of a framework around the state. Really mixed bag from that group. I've got some really proactive trainers that I've heard from over the years. Every time there's someone they're concerned about, something's popped up, they'll pick up the phone and give me a call and we'll work out the best way to manage it. Others on the list I probably haven't heard from since the training day. But that doesn't mean that they haven't been equipped with the skills to have a chat with the person that might be struggling themselves, and they might have managed issues on their own in their location. So, yeah, that was kind of a way to try get around the state and around the map with limited resources.
And I think it's a great idea, and kudos to those who have put their hand up to be those trainers' champions as well out there and about Victoria. From talking to the participants who contact you, Kira, where does their main issue lie in regards to racing? Is it the hours? Is it the constant grind? Is it the financial pressures? Where do you see the main issue from the feedback you're getting?
A lot of the people that contact me are actually going through, it's more people going through difficult times. It might be financially related, but a lot of, you know, Mel Sell that was on earlier, you get a lot of people that, it's usually when there's issues on top of life already. So even if they're under pressure in life, a lot of people just sort of getting on with their day-to-day and grinding through. It's when something happens on top of that, and then often something on top of that, and that's when people become overwhelmed and it sort of the burden becomes too heavy for them to carry, and that's often when people need that sort of more serious support and engagement with the service.
From your experience, your professional background, for those who are listening today who may be not feeling the best but don't feel strong enough to reach out, what would you say to them?
I would say this is Stableline, and the sort of the rollout of Stableline some 18 months, 2 years ago now. It's an incredible service. It's world class. They've got access to psychologists all throughout the state. It's completely anonymous. Racing Victoria will never know you've used it. You can call the number. You can get linked in with some help. You can just talk over the phone with someone. You don't have to go in and see someone face to face. If you wish to, you can, and they've, like I said, they've got psychologists that will be in your local area. And at the end of the day, all we get is a report saying the numbers that have used it, workplace, personal concern, and pretty much a scale of the seriousness of the effects it was having on the person's functioning. So we will never know that you've used it. No one will ever know. And I would encourage, if you're struggling, if you're going through a tough time, it actually takes more strength, I think, to reach out and to get help and to take those steps towards turning things around and helping yourself. Again, Mel was a great example of that. You couldn't meet people going through a tougher time. And it is tough when you're struggling to take a positive step forward. It takes energy. It takes a lot. And so for someone like her to do that, that was the first step on sort of her journey to trying to get back on top of things in life.
And if there's people out there who think that there's someone else struggling, mm-hmm. are they able to make a call on their behalf or alert you as well?
Yeah, I get a lot of that. So I get a lot of people calling up and talking about other people they might be concerned about. Those ones are a bit trickier to navigate. I generally have to go back and say, look, you need to let them know you've spoken to me and let them know that I'll be calling. I'm not really comfortable just cold calling people and not telling them how I've got their name and how I know what's going on in their life. And once you have that conversation, you know, 99% of people understand that, are comfortable with it. And they'll go back and it actually starts a conversation between those two people as well. And off the back of that, I'll reach out to the person. And some people I reach out to and we have long conversations, and off the back of that, they're, you know, kind of evaluate things and weigh up where they're at. And it's, yeah, they either refer them on and get them linked in with Stableline, or, some people just need that little vent session and that time to be heard, and that sort of helps them through.
Michael, if I can just add, the whole basis of what we've been trying to do in the last 3 or 4 years is actually build a framework with trust and confidence, okay? And I think that's been the biggest issue in the racing industry. They've dealt with these things in-house. They've dealt with these things themselves. This is not about framework of punishment or penalty. This is a framework about, let's build people at the front end. So the trainer champions is a classic example of, if you're not at a level where you don't want to ring Stableline and your trust is with a local trainer who's been there for 50 years, talk to that trainer. We've got the tools at the back end that can help you, whether it's a chat to Kira Olney, whether it's a chat to Kira Fitzgerald, whether it's a chat to the Trainers Association. You know, we will listen to what you've got to say. Quite often that is what people ring me up and have a conversation. So it's to build the framework that will get at the front end and educate and support and help and assist. You know, Racing Victoria are listening. You know, make no bones about it. Whether it's this, you know, working week, we are having fruitful conversations. They are listening, make no doubt. And putting these two ladies in charge of the areas that they're in and building that, you know, that front end and then letting the back end sort of come out, that's really important to what we're trying to do in this industry. As it is with Jason Petch, as you said, the Melbourne Racing, you know, Club with their foundation, they've got a similar thing. So it's real, it's relevant, and it's out there. And we as a racing industry got an obligation to our people to build that framework, and that's what we're doing at the same time.
Absolutely. Kira Olive, just before we say goodbye, also for participants who may be feeling threatened or bullied or harassed, what's the best way to get in contact?
I have a contact number that's on the website, and I also have a secure email address that's on the website. So I'm starting to get out to the stables, and we'll have some goodies that people have that contact number at hand. So they just need to contact either one of the mobile or the email, and I'll certainly get back to them.
And stable line, 1300 520 122. The two Kiras, you're doing wonderful work. Appreciate your time coming
Thanks
in today.
Us,
and I hope if anyone out there feels the need to contact them, you couldn't be in two safer hands than the two Kiras who have been in here today. Andrew, appreciate your time coming in. Just quickly, we're almost out of time. One word or two words, what's the feedback re the tongue tie new rule that has been introduced on the 1st of April?
Not great, as you could imagine. I mean, Michael, I think very, very briefly, we're in a different era. We've got a lot of external influence in the racing industry these days, heavily self-regulated for 100 years. All of a sudden, we have animal activists, we have governments, as we've seen with the Martin Report released recently up in Queensland. We've all got, you know, so there's so many areas that are influencing what we do in the racing industry, more so today than ever before. And so it's driving a number of our rule considerations. And I think as an industry, we need to deal with that. But we still need to push back when we need to push back. And the tongue ties one was, as Matt said, it was a direct result of the Four Corners program that happened on the ABC. Perceived issue of welfare with tongue ties. Is it real? Is it not real? But there it is. That's the perception.
And no consultation?
There was consultation. This has been on the table, Michael, since this report happened in November. The Trainers Association were not for the rule change back then, but unfortunately it's bubbled away in the background, and the two committees of Racing Australia have decided in their wisdom that this is the best way to go to get some uniformity around tongue ties, the use of the tongue tie, the actual way the tongue tie is applied, and at the same time it responds to some, you know, welfare concerns. So I mean, do we have a mortgage on being right or wrong? I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's an unusual one. But, I mean, the overarching issue I want to put on the table is that they do talk to us, but more so than ever before, the influences externally are driving a lot of the decisions.
Andrew, I appreciate your time this morning. And this will be a topic and a subject that we talk more about. As I said, Giles Thompson will be in the studio next week. We'll talk more about the working week and all the issues that go along with that. But ladies, appreciate your time this morning. Andrew, you too as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed that. It wasn't hardcore racing talk, but it was very important for all of those involved in the industry. We're going to take a break. On the other side, we'll be finding you the winners at Benalla.